A popular speculation throughout human history is the charge that Jews are engaged in ritualistic murder. This accusation was especially common in the medieval era, where it was alleged Jews engaged in human sacrifice and the drinking of blood, especially that of children. However, most Jews today will completely deny this and accuse you of anti-Semitism. They have even created a phrase for this type of accusation. They call it blood libel. In this documentary, I will attempt to uncover the truth on this matter, and also show you how it relates to other accusations, like vampirism and the consumption of adrenochrome. This topic is very taboo, and perhaps on the surface it seems absurd. But as we dive deeper into this topic, the truth will be undeniable. All of my sources and citations can be found in the description below. One of the biggest Jewish organizations in the world today, who adamantly denies such claims, is of course the Anti-Defamation League, an organization who was formed by Jewish lawyers who were a part of B'nai B'rith, a Masonic Jewish fraternity. The ADL, who ironically used the slogan, "Fighting Hate for Good," were actually formed out of hate, racism, and corruption to protect a known Jewish pedophile named Leo Frank, who murdered and raped a 13-year-old Catholic girl called Mary Fagan, a child worker at Leo Frank's pencil factory. While Leo was being held in custody awaiting trial, he tried to have a black man framed and a black key witness murdered, as to prevent them from testifying against him. This attempt, however, failed, and Leo was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison. However, the governor of Georgia had his sentence commuted. They never denied his guilt, but they sought to let him free anyway. The governor also happened to be the lawyer at the law firm that attempted to defend Leo. The Georgians took the matters into their own hands when they found this out, and they lynched Leo Frank. These Jewish lawyers and Freemasons formed the organization which now is called the ADL, who currently lead the way in internet censorship and cancel culture. The reason why I bring all of this up is because the ADL website has a page dedicated to the topic of Jewish human sacrifice, and I would like to read the opening part of their article. According to their article, quote, "The blood libel refers to a centuries-old false allegation that Jews murder Christians, especially Christian children, to use their blood for ritual purposes, such as an ingredient in the baking of a Passover matzah, also known as unleavened bread. It is also sometimes called the ritual murder charge. The blood libel dates back to the Middle Ages and has persisted despite Jewish denials and official repudiations by the Catholic Church and many secular authorities. Blood libels have frequently led to mob violence and pogroms, and have occasionally led to the decimation of entire Jewish communities. The blood libel is particularly appalling in the light of the fact that Jews follow the Hebrew Bible's law to not consume any blood, which is found in the book of Leviticus. In order for an animal to be considered kosher, all its blood must have been drained and discarded." Unquote. So it is interesting that the ADL give us some pretty specific details on the charge of Jewish ritualistic murder. Of course they deny it, and they claim it's not true, due to the fact that drinking blood is against their Torah-based beliefs. Even though the very book that they cite as evidence against this charge talks about Jews drinking blood. While it may be against the Torah to commit such abominable acts, there is plenty of evidence to show that Jews have been doing it regardless for more than 4,000 years. It should also be pointed out that the vast majority of Jews today are not in observance to the Old Testament, but the Talmud and the worshipping of false gods. To the average Gentile, looking in from the outside, it may seem like a contradiction for the Jews to be involved in the drinking of blood, but if it can be properly understood that the Jews put their observation of the Talmud above everything else, they are no longer bound by the laws of the Old Testament, especially when they start worshipping false gods. According to Al-Muslimani, a Jewish convert to Islam, speaking on this matter of the supposed contradiction, said the following, quote, "The Talmud says that there are two kinds of blood pleasing to God, the blood of Passover and the blood of circumcision," unquote. To emphasize this point, the head rabbi of Syria, known as Rabbi Jacob, noted the following, quote, "God loves two kinds of blood, the Passover sacrificial blood and the blood of the circumcision," unquote. Both of these quotes are cited in a book titled Matzo of Zion, written by Mustafa Talas, PhD, who also claims the rabbis know very well how and when it's permissible to use the blood of the goyim. One of the biggest lies of the Jew is that they follow the Torah, which is the name they give for the first five books of the Old Testament.
The Talmud is the holy book of the Jews. It was the oral sayings of the rabbis. It's known as the wisdom of the rabbis.
According to Judaism, the oral law, or what would later be known as the Talmud, was given to the 70 elders that came to the base of Mount Sinai but were not allowed to proceed any further. The Pharisees believed that these 70 elders received a much more extensive and profound revelation than Moses, which was not to be written down. It was only to be passed down orally. And these oral traditions took precedence over the written Torah, or what we know as Genesis through Deuteronomy. Evidence of this is found in the Talmud itself. Eruban 21b, "My son, be more careful in the observance of the words of the scribes than in the words of the Torah."
That's what differentiates the Orthodox from the non-Orthodox.
The non-Orthodox sees the Talmud as more man-made.
More man-made and developing and so on and so forth.
Whereas you believe the Talmud is inspired by God.
It's inspired by God, yeah.
Everything that has anything to do with Scripture is considered the Word of God by a large segment of the...
Including the Talmud.
Yes.
He said, "You don't believe in the religion of Moses. You have for your religion," he told the Jews, "you have for your religion the traditions of the elders." The average Jew believes that the Old Testament is a wonderful book of myths and stories that have good meaning. But you can understand the Old Testament only by studying the Talmud and the Kabbalah.
The Jews stopped believing in the Torah starting in Genesis chapter 1.
I believe creation was a design that's unending. Mm-hmm. Evolution is part of the process. And the beginning to me, you know, there are people who talk about the Big Bang Theory. Mm-hmm. I have no quarrel with them.
So you don't take the beginning of Genesis with the Garden of Eden and the serpent, you don't take that literally then?
No, I to me, those are parables.
So when you look at the key teachings of the books of Moses, Genesis through Deuteronomy, the Jews don't really believe any of these.
The vast majority of Jews are humanist Jews. And the next biggest category is ultra-Orthodox Jews, both of which put their observance in the Talmud above all other books. This also shouldn't be of any surprise to Christians, because the Bible is so clear on the fact that Jews are the synagogue of Satan. In 1 John chapter 2, verse 23, we read the following, quote, "Whosoever denieth the Son, the same hath not the Father. But he that acknowledge the Son have the Father also," unquote. So from reading this verse, straight away it should immediately tell us that Jews who reject Christ do not have the same God that Christians do. If you want something more specific, let's consider the words of Jesus Christ, who was rebuking the Jews in his time. When the Jews said they are of Abraham in John chapter 8, Jesus rebuked them and said, quote, "If ye were of Abraham's children, ye would do the works of Abraham," unquote. Obviously, the Jews were physically of Abraham, but because they had turned away from God and followed the traditions of men, which I interpret to mean a Moloch-worshipping religion, which uses the Talmud, they cannot spiritually be of God. You can't have the real God and Satan. You can only serve one, not the other. In verse 44 of chapter 8, Jesus flat out tells them the following, quote, "Ye are of your father the devil, and the lust of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. Unquote. When we keep in mind that the Jews are commanded to lie to the goy and to cheat the goy, we shouldn't expect the majority of them to confess their evil ways. In the Talmud, Sanhedrin 59a, we read the following, quote, "To communicate anything to a goy about our religious relations would be equal to the killing of all Jews. For if the goyim knew what we teach about them, they would kill us openly." Unquote. Throughout the centuries, there have been many Jews by their own free will and others through interrogation that have admitted to the charge of Jewish ritual murder, especially of Christian children. They have admitted to it in the courts. They have admitted to it in their books. They have discussed it openly, and many have been caught red-handed in the very act. In the 3rd century AD, Christian historian and bishop of Caesarea named Eusebius wrote in his writings that Jews in all communities ritually murdered Christians during their Purim festivals. Eusebius was very crucial of the Jews and their religion. His advice doubtless influenced the enactment of anti-Jewish laws by Constantine, at whose right hand Eusebius sat in the Council of Nicaea. Eusebius puts the Jews at fault for the crumbling relationship between Jews and Christians, and made it clear that the Jewish people persecuted Christians every opportunity that they had.
In December 2018, the UK launched an independent inquiry into the persecution of Christians worldwide. In order to mark the publication of this report, the British Embassy to the Holy See held this event at the Basilica of St. Bartholomew on the island in Rome. It is home to relics of modern-day Christian martyrs, ranging from Europe to the Middle East. Sally Axworthy, British Ambassador to the Holy See, believes it is important to better understand and assist persecuted Christians.
Some of the statistics are shocking. The report says that 80% of people who suffer persecution for their religious beliefs worldwide are Christian. And it says that 245 million Christians are being persecuted. So those are big numbers. And that's getting people talking about that is the first step.
Today, it's these Christians who feel they need protection.
These extremists, whether Muslim, whether Jews, is raising more and more.
We are afraid because there was an escalation, very dangerous escalation.
That escalation is of hate crimes against Christians in Israel. In this Jerusalem church, the words "Jesus is garbage" was scrawled on the side wall. At the Vatican's Jerusalem headquarters, recent graffiti threatened death to Arabs and Christians and all those who hate Israel. But the church believes this isn't only about police. The Holy Land's top Catholic official says some Israeli schools teach hate. Some Israeli politicians preach exclusions. As the Pope arrives, some Christians living in what they consider the holiest place on earth say they feel neither welcome nor protected.
There are many accounts throughout history of Jews ritualistically murdering Christian children. Many of them were made saints by the church. Cardinal Ganganelli, who later became Pope, once wrote in his writings, quote, "I admit, then, as true, the fact of the blessed Simon, a boy 3 years old, killed by the Jews of Trent. I also admit as truth another fact, which happened in the year 1462, in the village of Rhine. In the person of the blessed Andarelli, a boy barbarously murdered by Jews." Unquote. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther, founder of the Lutheran Church, briefly describes his thoughts on this matter in his thesis, The Jews and Their Lies. He says the following, quote, "In history, therefore, they are often accused of poisoning wells, stealing children, and mutilating them, as in Trent, Wisenussi, etc. Of course they deny this, be it so or not, however, I know completely well the full. Ready will is not lacking with them, if they could only transform it into deeds in secret or openly. Know this for a certainty and act accordingly." Unquote. In 1492 in Spain, a child by the name of Christopher, who was taken from a small village into a cave, was ritualistically murdered by Jews in an effort to extract his blood. Shortly thereafter, Queen Isabella of Castile issued an edict that banished Jews from Spain forever. It wasn't until about 1967 where Jews were officially allowed back in. While there are many other reasons for the Jews' banishment from the Spanish lands, like usury, deceit, overall wickedness, and for what was called a serious and detestable crime. Well-respected historian William Walsh argues in his book entitled Isabella of Spain that this so-called serious and detestable crime was that of the murder of Christopher. Harold Rom, PhD and historian, echoes this sentiment by claiming this was indeed the reason and also points out that the Jews were found guilty and were convicted in court. In order to better understand the charge of ritualistic murder by the Jews, I think it's important we reflect on its existence in ancient times, medieval times, and also modern times. The Old Testament records the practice of animal sacrifice from the times of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and perhaps even earlier. One of the purposes of recounting the new sacrifice of Isaac, which was interrupted by God, was to illustrate the sublime significance and need of animal sacrifice as supplanting the abomination of human sacrifices often practiced by pagans in the surrounding areas. The new sacrifice of Isaac would also be an illustration of the Christian doctrine of Jesus, the only begotten Son of God, sacrificed to atone for the sins of man, the Lamb of God. The sacrifice to end all sacrifice. In the Old Testament, there were a few times when the Jews strayed from their covenant with God and instead started worshipping false gods, like Moloch. These Jews engaged in ritualistic black magic and human sacrifices, especially with children. We can read about this in Judges chapter 11, Jeremiah chapter 7, and the story of Jeroboam. We find many Jews, even in ancient times, were engaged in this practice. They even built a shrine south of Jerusalem where the human sacrifices were burnt in a pit, often called a tophet. It's believed that the practice was done at night time, where drums were beaten to conceal the crying of child victims. Merriam-Webster dictionary also gives us a definition of a tophet. According to the etymology, tophet is a shrine south of ancient Jerusalem where human sacrifices were performed to Moloch. We also get some more detail from the Old Testament on this topic, where it's explicitly stated that this diabolical practice was not of God, but was the workings of evil Jews who had forsaken their covenant and instead decided to worship the false god Moloch.
For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Zidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. And Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and went not fully after the Lord as did David his father. Then did Solomon build an high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, in the hill that is before Jerusalem, and for Molech, the abomination of the children of Ammon. And likewise did he for all his strange wives, which burnt incense and sacrificed unto their gods. And the Lord was angry with Solomon, because his heart was turned from the Lord God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice, and had commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods. But he kept not that which the Lord commanded. Since the day that your fathers came forth out of the land of Egypt unto this day, I have even sent unto you all my servants the prophets, daily rising up early and sending them. Yet they hearkened not unto me, nor inclined their ear, but hardened their neck. They did worse than their fathers. Therefore thou shalt speak all these words unto them, but they will not hearken to thee. Thou shalt also call unto them, but they will not answer thee. But thou shalt say unto them, This is a nation that obeyeth not the voice of the Lord their God, nor receiveth correction. Truth is perished, and is cut off from their mouth. Cut off thine hair, O Jerusalem, and cast it away, and take up a lamentation on high places, for the Lord hath rejected and forsaken the generation of his wrath. For the children of Judah have done evil in my sight, saith the Lord. They have set their abominations in the house which is called by my name to pollute it. And they have built the high places of Tophet, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom, to burn their sons and their daughters in the fire, which I commanded them not, neither came it into my heart. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that it shall no more be called Tophet, nor the valley of the son of Hinnom, but the valley of slaughter. For they shall bury in Tophet till there be no place. And the carcasses of this people shall be meat for the fowls of the heaven and for the beasts of the earth, and none shall fray them away. Then will I cause to cease from the cities of Judah and from the streets of Jerusalem the voice of mirth and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, for the land shall be desolate.
The Old Testament strictly forbids the sacrifice of humans and the worshipping of false gods. However, like we just read, many Jews and Israelites practice these traditions anyway. While many of these practices among the Semitic people predated Abraham, we can see plenty of influences coming from outside also. Like when the Jews escaped Babylonian captivity, they brought many of the demonic teachings with them. We can also read about this when studying the foreign concubines of Solomon, who promoted these traditions within the various temples at that time. We also know that child sacrifice was very prominent within the Carthaginian, Canaanite, and Phoenician society, all of which were in close proximity to the Jews. The common denominator with all of these outside influences is that they all worshipped Moloch instead of the God of the Old Testament. The significance of this was, this God, which is usually depicted as a golden bull with a fiery altar at its base, required child sacrifice. A holy sacrifice consumed by fire, or what the Babylonian Talmud calls Korban Olah. The Korban Olah is better known for its traditional name in the English, which is Holocaust, which comes from the Greek word Holocaustus. While the Holocaust is generally associated with the alleged systematic slaughter of Jews during World War II, we can see a much deeper Kabbalistic aspect behind this. For it was this alleged holy sacrifice consumed by fire that allowed the Jews to go and ethnically cleanse the Palestinians and to occupy the state under the instruction of the Rothschild banking dynasty and the Zionist plan of returning to the so-called Promised Land. They believed Zionism was a divinely inspired act that enabled the Jews to end their diaspora. We can also read about the ancient practices of Korban Olah in the Talmud. If we travel to Chabad.org, which is an authority on the history of the doctrine of Judaism, we can read an article entitled The Tragic History of Moloch Child Sacrifice, in which they state the following, quote, Rashi, in his commentary on the Torah, adopts the opinion of Abay. This was a form of idolatry named Moloch, and this was the manner of its worship, that one would hand over one's child to the pagan priests, who would make two huge fires. The child was then passed through on foot between these two fires. Nashmenides, quoting from the Jerusalem Talmud, argues that the service included the father himself passing his child through the fire. Maimonides concurs with this opinion. The Midrash elaborates on this disturbing service. How did the Moloch work in the valley of Ben Hinnom? It was built outside of Jerusalem. It was an idol with a face of a calf and open hands, like someone who wants to take something from another. They would light this idol on fire until his hands were scorching. There were seven chambers before him, and according to the quality of the sacrifice, that is how close one could come to him. If one came with a bird, then chamber 1, goat, chamber 2, sheep, chamber 3, calf, chamber 4, cow, chamber 5, and ox, chamber 6. He who brought his child, the priest would say that his offering is the greatest sacrifice. He would enter the innermost chamber and go and kiss the Moloch. The priest would then take the child and place it near the Moloch. They would then bang with the drums to drown out the cries. Unquote. Medieval French rabbi Shlomo Yitzchaki, otherwise known as Rashi, wrote an extensive commentary on the Talmud in the 12th century. his analysis of the book of Jeremiah 7:31 shed some light on the sacraments of Moloch worship as related in the Hebrew texts. He says the following, quote, Topheth is Moloch, which was made of brass, and they heated him from his lower parts, and his hands being stretched out and made hot, they put the child between his hands, and it was burnt. When it vehemently cried out, the priests beat the drum, that the father might not hear the voice of his son, and his heart might not be moved. Unquote.
The Star of David, where does that symbol come from?
It's never written explicitly in the Bible itself.
Is it in the Talmud? Is there a passage in the Bible about that or no?
No.
Okay. So you're not really sure exactly where that comes from?
No.
You got me.
Is it nobody knows, yeah, huh?
I don't know. I'm not, yeah.
Because I know it's called the Star of David.
Yeah.
Does it have anything to do with David?
No, I don't think so.
There must be somewhere, I do not remember exactly what the association was.
Okay. I believe that what they call the Star of David is actually the Star of Remphan. Because when you study the Bible, you'll see that when they worshipped other gods, the Bible talks about them carrying the banner of the star of their god, Remphan.
You rejected the God of the Bible. You took up for yourself the star, that's the six-point star, of your god, called Remphan or Kiun. All these were names for Moloch, the great Baal, the great fire god, who was the devil.
Beelzebub.
That's right, Beelzebub. And they were shocked about this. Now, who is this star god? If they only read the Old Testament, they would know this. In Amos, God said, you have taken up the star, and you've made me furious by doing that. And you have actually sacrificed your own children to the star god through the fires. They sacrificed their own children, the Jews did, to the star god.
The name Moloch derives from the Hebrew letters M-L-K, which generally means king. The M-L-K is vocalized as Molech, or Moloch, in the Masoretic texts, which is an authoritative text in Rabbinic Judaism. It's from this pronunciation that we get the contemporary name Moloch. This deity is mostly depicted as a golden, bronze, and sometimes silver bull, which is internally heated by fire, sometimes decorated in Judaic symbols and Hebrew characters. When we read about the Korban Ola and the sacrifices that occurred at Tophet, with the notion in mind that these sacrifices were not always animals, it's worth pointing out that Jewish tradition has it that the sacrifice should be eaten in communion as a sacrificial meal. What generally comes to mind when I think about human sacrifice, the drinking of blood, witchcraft, and cannibalism, is the many rumors commonly associated with Freemasonry and the political elite, a lot of which was uncovered during the Pizzagate investigation. But more on this later. It seems to me that these traditions actually stem from these Moloch-worshipping Jews and pagans of ancient times. When you have Jesus and Logos as your thesis, the antithesis, or the antithesis, is of course Satan. Some of you might be asking, what is the source of this child sacrifice and ritualistic murder? How did this practice come into contact with the Jewish people? The answer isn't quite clear because it goes back in time before recorded history. But as the Bible tells us, there is nothing new under the sun. The same satanic evils which engaged in this practice today were led by the same spirit of the ancient world. There have been many cultures all throughout the earth that have practiced child sacrifice and ritualistic murder. From what I can tell, it's always to do with appeasing the gods, sin atonement, the occult, and sacrifice. The interesting thing about all of these various cultures is we find commonalities everywhere, and there seems to have been a lot of cultural diffusion. For an example, Egypt, South America, the Middle East, China, Portugal, all seem to have pyramids, as well as the practice of child sacrifice that go along with the pyramids. Another thing that we find all over the world is the worshipping of Moloch. Another commonality is the drinking of blood and the effects that come with it. While we don't have the time to look at all of these cultures, It's worth going over just a hand few, which relate to the Jewish people. One notorious ancient civilization known for their participation in child sacrifice and Moloch worship was the Kingdom of Carthage.
Ancient writers claimed that on moonlit nights, Carthaginian priests offered a living child as a sacrifice to the gods in times of war, famine, or plague. Flutes, tambourines, and lyres drowned out the parents' cries. Though the accounts come from their rivals, the archaeology appears damning.
The evidence that people have found that the Carthaginians really did sacrifice babies does seem to be quite strong. In cemeteries that the Carthaginians called tophets, they found the burned bones of babies buried inside pots.
Since the 1920s, archaeologists have uncovered 20,000 of these burial jars.
Many historians have tried to claim that the Carthaginian child sacrifice was nothing more than a Roman myth. However, much evidence has now been proven to show the truth on this matter. According to a press release by the Oxford University, quote, "A collaborative paper by academics from institutions across the globe, including Oxford University, suggests that Carthaginian parents ritually sacrificed young children as an offering to the gods. The paper argues that a well-meaning attempt to interpret the tophets, ancient infant burial grounds, simply as child cemeteries are misguided. And the practice of child sacrifice could even hold the key to why the civilization was founded in the first place. The research pulls together literary, epigraphical, archaeological, and historical evidence and confirms the Greek and Roman accounts of the events that held sway until the 1970s, when scholars began to argue that the theory was simply an anti-Carthaginian propaganda. The paper is published in the journal Antiquity." Unquote. While many Jewish think tank groups try to claim that there is no evidence of Jewish presence in Carthage prior to the 2nd century, the evidence seems to show the opposite. I personally suspect that the reason Jews tried to deny their presence in the Punic era is because of the overwhelming evidence which shows that this was a massive site of child sacrifice, Moloch worship, and black magic. Children, both male and female, mostly a few weeks old, were sacrificed by the Carthaginians at the locations known as tophets, just like they were by the Judeans in the south of Jerusalem. We also know that the Carthaginians were Semitic people, who spoke a Semitic language. Not only is there plenty of evidence to show the presence of Jews in Carthage during the Punic era, but first century historian Flavius Josephus puts the Jews as being the founders of the city. The Old Testament also puts the tribe of Asher in the cities of Tyre and Sidon, and also states that Carthage was founded from Tyre. The French archaeologist A.L. D'Altri uncovered a Jewish necropolis in Carthage, in which 105 chambers, each with roughly 15 oculi, which would have allowed burial for 1,500 people each. The Jewishness of this site is proven by the symbols of the menorah, the shofar, the lulav, and the etrog. The abominations of the Carthaginians were known all throughout the Roman Empire, who regularly spoke of the demonic nature of this place. It seems so evil that they claimed it should be burnt to the ground and not a single trace of it should be left. In about 146 BC, the Romans besieged the ancient city and utterly destroyed it. A modern myth has grown up that the Roman forces then sowed the ruins with salt so nothing would ever grow there ever again. However, within a few hundred years, Jewish, African, and Gentile settlers had once again inhabited the location while it was under Roman occupation. According to Tertullian, a Christian author from Carthage in the 2nd century AD, he documented the devilish behavior of the Jews in the city and claims that the synagogues were fountains of persecution, and that the Jews constantly harassed Christians and even persecuted them. In his writings, he made it very clear that Christians abstained from murder, adultery, and child sacrifice, where the pagan and Jews living there did not. Even to this day, many of the murder sites which once stood in modern-day Tunisia can be visited by tourists. All throughout the medieval ages, from the 5th century until about the 15th century, the charge of ritualistic murder was very common all throughout Europe and other places where Christianity took influence. When we examine a lot of the historical citations, folklore, and archaeological evidence of Jewish ritual murder in this time period, I think it's important to also understand the historical context. The way of life of our European ancestors was much different to our own. It needs to be said that almost nobody in this time period was an atheist. Something like that was just unheard of. We also know the common man in this time period was illiterate and was very much detached from cultures in faraway lands. This will help us deal with some of the more fantastical and hard-to-believe claims that were made about Jews in times past. Because we are dealing with people who were extremely religious and superstitious, when we analyze some of these stories about the Jews through our modern eyes and hyper-rationalistic and secularized understanding, we tend to disregard a lot of what our ancestors had to say. We also don't know exactly how much has been embellished or exaggerated, as much of the historical citations about Jewish ritual murder were recorded through the ages through song, poetry, and even fairy tales. Because of this, Jews today are very easily able to discredit claims made by our European ancestors, especially today when everybody examines things through an atheistic and hyper-rationalized approach. The topic becomes taboo. However, I do feel it's important to explore these stories regardless, because there is just no way all of these stories can be fake. There was a damn good reason why the people in the medieval era were so crucial of Jews, and we do have a lot of evidence for when Jewish ritual murder did actually occur. With this context in mind, I'd like to recite one of these poems that gives us detail on this topic. This poem relates to a 13th century killing of a 9-year-old boy named Hugh, whose body was found dead in a well. By the 15th century, this poem had become a song that was pretty well known all throughout Scotland. Quote, it rains in merry Lincoln. It rains both great and small. When all the boys come out to play and toss their ball. They toss their ball so high, they toss their ball so low. They tossed it over the Jews' garden, with all the fine Jews below. The first came out was a Jew's daughter, was dressed all in green. Come in, my little Sir Hugh. You shall have your ball again. Oh no, I dare not come in without my playmates too. For if my mother should be at the door, she would cause my poor heart to rue. The first she offered was a fig, the next a finger thing, the third a cherry as red as blood, and that enticed him in. She set him up in a guilty chair, she gave him a sugar sweet, and she laid him out on the dresser board, and stabbed him like a sheep. And when the school was over, his mum came out for a call, with a little rod under her apron, to beat her son withal. His mother she went to the Jew's wife house, and knocked loud at the ring. Oh, little Sir Hugh, if you are here, come let your mother in. He is not here, Jew's wife said. He is not here today. He's with the schoolfellows on the green, keeping this high holiday. My head is heavy, I cannot get up. My grave is so deep. Besides, a penknife sticks into my heart, so I cannot get. Go home, mother dear, and prepare my windling sheet, for tomorrow morning before it's day, your body and mine shall meet, and lay my Bible at my head, and my grammar at my feet, and all me schoolfellows, as they pass by, may read them for my sake. Unquote. With that being said, when we do look at the many examples that we have throughout Europe, predominantly in Christian regions, we do find a lot of similarities to these stories. In a lot of these instances, children would go missing, and sometimes even adults. Sometimes the bodies were never found, but a lot of the times the bodies were found, and when they were found, there would be a lot of evidence to suggest that there was some kind of ritualistic killing and satanic practice involved. usually wounds to the body that had suggested the body was drained of blood. Genitalia and eyeballs would be removed. Quite often there would be an emphasis on stigmata, or the desecration of Christ, like wounds to the hands, a crown of thorns, etc. Due to the anti-Christian nature of these killings, Jews would more often than not find themselves being accused, even in the absence of evidence. In times where there was no evidence of who the murderer was, it was usually the ritualistic nature of the killing that would indicate Jews were somehow involved. Now, I'm sure there were many times where Jews have been wrongfully blamed, but there are thousands of times when Jews have confessed their crimes when they were interrogated. Many of them confessed to drinking the blood of the children. Also, we have the confessions of former Jewish people who had converted to Christianity and exposed some of the more secret practices of these Jews who they once grouped with.
In the year 1475 in Trent, Italy, Jews reportedly ritually murdered a child by the name of Simon. During the process, they also circumcised the child. This has also been the reported case in many other such incidents, although we don't believe it's necessarily a requirement during the bloodletting process. This child, too, had puncture marks over his entire body. The child was later made a saint.
St. Simon of Trent was murdered in 1475 in Trent, Italy, a beautiful Renaissance city of the era. He was taken off the street by cult members, much as pedophile killers do today. The poor little boy was offered candy and lured away, where he was murdered for the pre-Passover sacrifice to obtain the blood for the rituals. This was a very, very famous case of the era, resulted in the later canonization as a Christian martyr of young Simon. The case is referred to in the book Blood Ritual as a multi-adjudicated case, in that it went before more than one tribunal. The Jewish perpetrators had money and influence, so the case went on appeal, which was a very rare thing in those days. Multi-adjudicated, it went also before the Vatican, where the congregation that decides who becomes a saint examined the case in very, very thorough detail. Simon was canonized, regarded as one of the most popular child saints of Europe, until 1965, when the politically correct ones in the Catholic Church decided to decanonize him.
In the book Lives of the Saints, Father Alban Butler described the child as an infant martyr and describes the event surrounding his murder thus. The Jews in the city of Trent decided to vent their hate by slaying a Christian child for the coming Passover, and Tobias, one of their number, was deputed to entrap a victim. He found a bright, smiling boy named Simon playing outside his home with no one guarding him. Tobias patted the little fellow's cheek and coaxed him to take his hand. The boy, who was not 2 years old, did so, but he began to call and cry for his mother when he found himself being led from his home. Then Tobias silenced his grief and conducted him securely to his house. At midnight on Holy Thursday, the work of butchery began. They gagged his mouth. They held his arms in the form of a cross, while they pierced his tiny body with awls and bodkins in blasphemous mockery. After an hour's torture, the little martyr lifted his eyes to heaven and gave up his innocent soul. The Jews cast his body into the river, but their crime was discovered and punished, while the holy relics were enshrined in St. Peter's Church.
Another famous example of the widespread practice of Jewish ritual murder of Christians occurred in the 12th century. A 12-year-old boy in Norwich, England, called William, who was an apprentice. According to Thomas Monmouth, who investigated the murder and interviewed surviving witnesses, he claims that William was found dead. His head was shaved with an uncountable number of puncture wounds that indicated the body was drained of blood. A forensic examination of the body showed that William was fixed to a cross and tortured. His body was found discarded in the woods, with a crown of thorns around his head. This was an obvious mockery and imitation of the crucifixion of Jesus. Thomas the Investigator also records in his notes that one converted Jew told him that there was an argument over how to dispose of the body. Another interesting account of the story has it that the Jews actually bribed the sheriff and that this is why nobody was charged for the murder. A deacon was threatened with his life and told to keep his mouth shut, which he did until his deathbed confession, where he admits to Thomas that the sheriff and others were threatened or bribed into discretion. What's interesting about this story is the Jews were only allowed in the country a few years earlier, after their expulsion, to help the king with his finances. This event put the whole country into high alert. Unfortunately, this was not the first or last time Jewish ritual murder on children had occurred in those lands. Thomas was made a saint of the church and was recognized up until modern times, where it was decided that such harsh reminders of the Jews' crimes were not to be tolerated in the Catholic Church. Up until the Catholic Church became a beacon of political correctness, there was about 25 children who were murdered in this occultish fashion by Jews who were granted the status of a saint. In almost all of these cases, people were trialed in court and found guilty, all of them being Jews. Many Jews in academia try to discredit this story, however, and claim that it's an anti-Semitic slander. They usually cite a testimony by a family member in which a ghostly apparition was mentioned, where the boy's spirit confessed he was indeed murdered by Jews. Obviously, to the secular modern Jew, such a claim is outrageous. They try to throw out the baby with the bathwater, obviously to protect their own image and for the sake of their own political expediency. They often mock the story today and claim anti-Semitism is the real motive behind these testimonies. What needs to be remembered, however, is the fact that we are dealing with the brutal murder of a little innocent boy, and that is no laughing matter. According to the Talmud, Book of Yalkut, section 245c, we read the following, quote, "Extermination of the Christians is a necessary sacrifice," unquote. There are many accounts of Jewish ritual murder in which Christian children seem to have been enticed with treats or sweet food. Another common element that pops up in a lot of these stories is Jews luring children into their homes or away from their villages. When I read about these historical accounts, I can't help but think of the story of Hansel and Gretel, or the Pied Piper, or the fairy tale of the Jew and the Thorn. All of these paint a very similar picture of these medieval events. We can certainly see today how this European folklore of blood libel is very much the theme for many of these fairy tales we hear about even to this very day. I often wonder if there is a connection. Another popular fairy tale that has its roots in European folklore is the idea of witches. Yvonne Owens, a professor of art and critical studies at the College of Victoria, notes, quote, "Witch was a catch-all term that referred to a wide variety of accused heretics or generally non-conforming others in Christian European society, such as Jews. European constructions of the witch actually come from a long line of myths about Jewish heresy and the nature of its persecution," unquote. So as it turns out, a lot of these fairy tales that we hear about where witches are stealing children from their homes and drinking their blood turns out to be Jews in the medieval times. The occult element to Judaism was far more prevalent in medieval times, and it was widely known that the Jews engaged in what was called witchcraft. The extreme anti-Christian sentiments espoused by these Jews couldn't go unnoticed, and was often the reason for them being removed from so many European nations during the medieval era. This is also where we get the European folklore of the Wandering Jew. There are many historical accounts of the Wandering Jews passing through town, and many of them were known to indulge in witchcraft. Many of these Wandering Jews were a part of the diaspora. Some were migrants who had fled their homes from other nations, some were caravan traders, and others were widely believed to have been literal witches who didn't want to stay in one area for too long, lest they be caught of their crimes. This explains why many Christian superstitions about Jews in medieval Europe sound a lot like the characteristics associated with witches and wizards. For example, that familiar, pointed, black witch hat actually has a unique relationship to Jewish history. Around 1215, Jews were required to wear a distinguished cone-shaped hat, often referred to as a Judenhut. In fact, in some areas of Europe, local Jews and these wandering Jews, as they have been referred to, are so commonly associated with the satanic arts that a law was passed in 1431 in Hungary requiring those accused of sorcery to wear these peaked cone hats, which share a striking resemblance of the typical witch Halloween costumes you see children wearing today. The term synagogue was even used during the 12th century by a medieval writer, Walter Mapp, to refer to the meeting place of witches and those who were associated with the dark arts. Despite the desperation of modern Jews trying to break this taboo and distancing themselves from rumours of Jewish ritual murder, it's all too often admitted by the Jews in their Talmud and other literature as well. For an example, in the Jewish Encyclopedia, 1906, volume 12, page 410, Jews admit to the ritualistic murder of children in Venice. In this particular case, witnesses came forward and the matter was handled by a trial. Three Jews were executed as a result. There are so many accounts of these trials and testimonies all throughout Europe that it becomes absurd to try and discredit them all as an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. The notion of Jews engaging in this ritualistic murder and witchcraft is so widespread that it's embedded into our European history. Anyone who tries to ride this off is not only insulting our European ancestors, but is lying about the overwhelming evidence. In the form of historical citations and court transcripts. Now, we don't have a photo or a tape recording of what happened back then, but we have bodies, we have court cases, we have witnesses, we have all of this sort of stuff which proves that all of this stuff is real. Even in early American history, there is an overwhelming number of accounts of so-called witches being trialed and executed for their abominable acts. Are we to just write all of this history off and ignore all of it? I would say, if anything, these topics need to be revisited and put back into the mainstream so we can see why there was so much stigma about the Jews in our long-forgotten history. The Jewish ritualistic murder of children seemed to have never have stopped. Even in the modern era, we can find prime examples of this occurring all over the world. Another key element of the Jewish ritual murder that needs to be spoken on is the aspect of vampirism and the drinking of blood. When the common person thinks about vampires, they tend to have this Halloween cartoon notion in their mind. In fact, even Wikipedia does a huge disservice to us with their covering up of the truth. Wikipedia seems to tell us that they are fictitious undead creatures originating in the 1800s, usually associated with childish myths. However, this is simply a lie. Most societies have had this concept of vampirism deep in their culture for a very long time, since before recorded history. In fact, beliefs in such legends became so pervasive that in some areas of Europe and the Middle East, it caused mass hysteria and even public executions of people believed to be vampires. Even to this day, the drinking of blood is performed in satanic circles all around the world.
But vampires in the 21st century? At least one person thinks we should still be on our guard. Meet Catherine Ramslin, forensic psychologist from Pennsylvania's DeSales University and author of four books investigating today's vampire subculture.
People tend to believe a vampire is what we see from Dracula. But since the 1990s, we've really had a difference in how people understand the vampire, and they've redefined it.
She's on her way to an interview with a vampire. At least, that's what he says he is. 4 years ago, Don Henry was an electronics engineer.
Whether or not I like it or not, but I do. I have become, I guess you'd say, the face or sort of a role model for my community.
Don is now the modest figurehead of America's flourishing vampire culture, now spread over nearly 80 cities. However, some of them claim that they do drink blood from consenting victims.
Do you drink blood?
Yes, I do.
What happens to you when you take it from somebody?
I feel invigorated.
And how do they feel?
Drained.
Blood drinking carries health risks, so most 21st century vampires have found another way to suck our blood.
Some people actually do it emotionally. I will harvest that energy and actually take it upon myself, and then finally project it outward.
But according to Catherine, the vampires to be really afraid of don't dress like Nosferatu.
I do know from being a psychologist that there is such a thing as a psychological vampire that somehow manages to take all your resources. It could be financial, it could be emotional. They use your trust, they get in close, they suck you dry, just like a vampire.
One of the reasons why the drinking of blood is forbidden by God is because of its connection to our life force and soul. Life is in the blood. In the Old Testament, we know God and Moses forbid the drinking of blood. We see a lot of scripture on how life is written in the blood, about the sprinkling of the blood on the altar, and the connection between our blood and the soul. In the New Testament, we have the drinking of blood also being forbidden, because we know that Jesus was the sacrifice to end all sacrifice. He is the Lamb of God. So it should be no surprise to us that these rebellious Jews and Satanists would invert what the Bible says and engage in this satanic practice. In Leviticus chapter 7, verses 26 through to 27, we read the following, quote, "Moreover, ye shall eat no manner of blood, whether it be of fowl or of beast, in any of your dwellings. Whatsoever soul it be that eateth any manner of blood, even that soul shall be cut off from his people." Unquote. We later find out in the story that because of the Jews' iniquity, their drinking of blood and other abominations, they were cut off from God. But we have a very specific requirement here which prohibits the drinking of blood, to the point that the Jews are threatened with being cut off from their people, in the same way vampires are outcast from society. Logos Media put out a two-part series on their YouTube channel back in 2019, and I want to cite some of that research as to how it relates to adrenochrome and the drinking of blood. Many people will try to say that adrenochrome isn't real, but we have scientific proof of its existence, and the CIA admit to testing it, as we are about to see. If you want to dig more deeper into this topic, I suggest you check the description below for these links. One of the first books that the CIA published on mind control and psychedelics back in 1954 was a book called Doors of Perception, written by a guy called Aldous Huxley, who was one of the chief architects on the MKUltra program and was a well-known social engineer. Huxley also worked with the MI6 and was a known member of the Ordo Templi Orientis, a Masonic fraternal lodge associated with Aleister Crowley, who was deep into pedophile black magic and the drinking of blood. For those of you who don't know, Huxley and his brother were both eugenicists, who founded UNESCO. Huxley's grandfather, Thomas Huxley, was the propaganda manager for Charles Darwin. With that being said, I'd like to read a section from the introduction of their book, Doors of Perception. Quote, "These matters rested until, 2 or 3 years ago, a new and perhaps highly significant fact was observed. Actually, the fact had been staring everyone in the face for several decades, but nobody, as it happened, had noticed it until a young English psychiatrist, at present working in Canada, was struck by the close similarity in chemical composition between mescaline and adrenaline. Further research revealed that lysergic acid, which of course is LSD, an extremely potent hallucinogen derived from ergot, has a structural biochemical relationship to the others. Then came the discovery that adrenochrome, which is a product of the decomposition of adrenaline, can produce many of the symptoms observed in mescaline intoxication. But adrenochrome probably occurs spontaneously in the human body. In other words, each one of us may be capable of manufacturing a chemical, minute doses of which are known to cause profound changes in the consciousness. Certain of these changes are similar to those which occur in the most characteristic plague of the 20th century, schizophrenia. unquote. So if you consider what's being said here, Huxley, one of the chief architects of the MKUltra program, who is big into mind control and manufacturing psychosis, is telling us that they have tested and isolated adrenochrome, which has similar effects to mescaline.
What is this shit?
That stuff makes pure mescaline seem like ginger beer, man. Adrenochrome.
Adrenochrome?
Adrenochrome occurs in the body naturally when adrenaline is dumped into the blood of a human being, usually brought on by fear, trauma, and panic. Now, if you want to know who gave Huxley his dose of mescaline, it was none other than his personal doctor, Dr. Humphrey Osment, who had a connection to Russian intelligence. According to a letter written by Aldous Huxley to Dr. Humphrey Osment, which is cited in a book called Letters of Aldous Huxley, Letter 182, we read the following, quote, "I hope your administrative difficulties have been resolved and that you are now free to set on with something more interesting. I'm glad to hear that the Russians have picked up on your adrenochrome work," unquote. So it's interesting to point out that Aldous Huxley, who was working with the CIA on the MKUltra program, and who was a key influencer in the creation of the counterculture revolution of the 1960s, is working with a doctor who is apparently sharing his adrenochrome research with the Russians. A deeper look into the writings of the research of Dr. Humphrey Osman shows us that at some point in his medical career, he was made the head of a mental hospital in Canada, where he was performing tests on schizophrenics and other mentally ill patients, who were the main source of extracted blood from which they were developing adrenochrome. It turns out that schizophrenics and young people have heightened adrenal glands which are capable of producing larger amounts of adrenochrome, which not only can be extracted and produced in a lab, but can be obtained directly from drinking the blood of tortured victims who are put under large amounts of trauma, fear, and stress. Of which the effects, according to Aldous Huxley and his doctor's research, is similar to mescaline and LSD. Could this perhaps be one of the reasons for the Jewish ritual murder and the drinking of blood in medieval times? However, this finding isn't necessarily unique to the CIA, because we can actually see examples of this adrenochrome in the blood being consumed by the Mohel rabbi who sucks on the freshly cut penis of a child during a circumcision ritual called Matitza Bepe, an ancient rabbinic and Talmudic tradition which is still performed to this very day, which has seen the death of many children due to herpes.
In the Halacha, in Yeridaya, that's the second section of the four sections of Halacha called the Shulchan Aruch, the set table, in chapter 266, Halacha 3, 4, 5, and 6, he describes how the circumcision is to be done. He says, after the cutting, the mohel does what is called metzitza, and metzitza means to suck, and it means doing so with his mouth. And one could say, well, why can't you use a tube? Well, you could, technically, but it's not the custom as to why, how it was done. Now, why is it that way? Well, you could say that in the olden days you didn't have tubes. Now you can have tubes, so why not? And the answer, as I thought about it, is that it's not as effective.
The Brooklyn District Attorney is investigating the death of an infant at Maimonides Hospital. The two-week-old died last fall after contracting herpes during the ritual which is called Metzitza Bepe. Health officials warn the virus can be transmitted during direct oral contact. Many defend the centuries-old practice.
You have more of a chance of getting hit by a car than getting herpes.
We still keep on doing it, and we will keep on doing it, because that's what it says in our religion, that's what we should do.
We find more examples of this during the era of the Aztecs, where the blood of human sacrifice victims was drunk by the Aztecs. Aleister Crowley, a satanic OTO occultist, also spoke about the young virgin children of high intelligence making the most suitable victim for sacrifice. In his writings, which seem to have inspired many occultists of the modern era, he admits to the consumption of bodily fluids and the sacrifice of children. According to Crowley, quote, I sleep with faith and found a corpse in my arms on awakening. I drank and danced all night with doubt and found her a virgin in the morning." Unquote. When we think about the modern day examples of ritual murder, cannibalism, and even vampirism, we usually are very quick to associate it with Freemasonry or Satanism. While this isn't an incorrect assertion, it must be duly noted that Freemasonry is born out of the mystical elements of Judaism and the ancient occultism of Babylon. According to a well-respected Jewish leader, Rabbi Isaac Wise, he claims that, quote, "Freemasonry is a Jewish establishment whose history, grades, official appointments, passwords, and explanations are Jewish from beginning to end." Unquote. An Australian Freemason named Reino Vercel in 2004 echoes this sentiment and claims the following in his writings, quote, "Zionist world leaders, men in influential positions, with various Masonic organizations everywhere, have worked hand in glove for a universal world revolution, which will bring in the One World Church and the One World Government. Many Masonic lodges are exclusively Jewish, as are the controlling B'nai B'rith lodges." Unquote. As we mentioned earlier, the B'nai B'rith is a Jewish Freemasonic organization which birthed what is called the Anti-Defamation League, perhaps one of the most influential organizations in trying to conceal Jewish ritual murder today. A speech at the B'nai B'rith convention in Paris, published shortly afterwards in the Catholic Gazette, London, in February 1936, in the Les Reveilles des Pupilles, Paris, a little later stated, quote, "We have found many secret associations which all work for our purpose under our orders and our direction. We have made it an honor, a great honor, for the Gentiles to join us in our organizations, which are, thanks to our gold, flourishing now more than ever. Yet it remains our secret that those Gentiles who betrayed their own and their most precious interests by joining us in our plot shall never know that those associations are of our creation and they serve our purpose." Unquote. While there were certainly times in history where Jews were forbidden from joining lodges connected to the Scottish Rite, Jewish Kabbalah and Luciferianism has always been an aspect of the inner workings. French Masonic lodges and those in different countries affiliated with the French Grand Orient during the Napoleonic occupations admitted Jews without restrictions. While there are also plenty of fraternal orders that are explicitly Jewish, all sects of Masonry today seem to accept and admit Jewish membership and their historical influence. Maurice Panay, in his book, The Plot Against the Church, speaks on the topic of the Jews spreading the religion of Satanism. In chapter 33, he says the following, quote, "Adolf Jacob Frank, a Jewish leader of the past 19th century, writes in his interesting work about the Kabbalah in connection with Jewish demonolatry, the worship of demons. If in Judaism traces of dark superstition are present, then one must above all seek the cause of terror which it inspires through its devil worship. The confession that there has existed a devil worship in Judaism is so therefore so valuable, because it comes from an important leader of the synagogue, who was no less than vice president of the Israelite Church Council of Paris, the highest Jewish authority in France, collaborator in the Israelite archives, and assistant director of the Imperial Library at the time of Napoleon III." Unquote. According to Maurice Panay, in his same book, The Plot Against the Church, he claims the following, quote, "To unmask Freemasonry, said Pope Leo XIII, is to conquer it. When we lift its mask, then every honest mind and every Christian heart will turn away from it with revulsion, and through this fact alone will it fall. Lone scholar and Jesuit Monsignor Leon Mieron, S.J. Archbishop, Bishop of Port Louis, shows us in his so very richly authenticated work, Clarification of Freemasonry, with crushing authority, that the Jews are the founders, organizers, and leaders of Freemasonry, which they use to attain world domination in order to destroy the Holy Church and the remaining existing religions." Unquote. According to Nestor H. Webster, In their book, Secret Societies and Subversive Movements, we read the following, quote, quoting Deschamps, writes, "That science of the demonical arts, of which the Jews were the initiators, and which cannot be ignored, the Jewish Kabbalists, in some form or other, in any comprehensive analysis of the situation." Eliphas Levi, an authority whom no one can accuse of anti-Semitism, asserts, "The Jews who believed most of all in the secrets of the Kabbalah were in the Middle Ages almost exclusively the grandmasters of magic. I assert, through study, demonology in Europe was in fact a Jewish science." Unquote.
"When you stretch forth your hands, I will turn away my eyes from you. When you multiply prayer, I will not hear, for your hands are filled with blood." Isaiah 1:4-15. And this, of course, refers to the New Testament, Matthew 27:25, where the Jews said, "Let his blood be upon us and our children." So that's what we have now. But they are definitely coming to power. There's no question about it. And also, if you look on products now to show the amount of power that they're getting, you'll see almost all your products. The letter U on your product stands for the Union of Orthodox Rabbis, and the K, you'll see on many of your products, stands for kosher. And this is basically a food tax. It's put on companies. From what I've read and been told, these companies have to pay for these symbols to be put on their products, and if they don't put them on their products, they'll be boycotted. And it's like hundreds of millions of dollars each year the rabbis take in from this. It's unbelievable.
So they can't even use their products in the distribution chain without putting the U and K.
Well, I don't know if they absolutely have to have it, but all I'm saying is that from what I've read and seen, they'll be boycotted if they don't do that, you know.
Right.
And, now, going back to what all this Freemasonry is rooted in, it's rooted in the Jewish Kabbalah. The Kabbalah is the Hebrew word for received tradition. The Jewish Kabbalah is a medieval Jewish book of occult philosophy and magic based on mystical interpretations of the Old Testament. The Kabbalah is important with magicians, sorcerers, witches, Satanists, as well as Masonic philosophers. And all the things that I just mentioned that are rooted, talked about Freemasonry, gets back and is rooted in the Jewish Kabbalah.
When we bear this Jewish aspect of secret societies and Freemasonry in mind, it becomes a lot clearer to identify some of the more esoteric teachings of Freemasonry. Almost all of the rites and symbols of Freemasonry remind oneself of the Jewish Kabbalah. It also becomes easier to make sense of the many times in which Freemasons and their crypto-Jews have been charged with the allegation of Moloch worship, child sacrifice, and the drinking of blood. It also helps us make sense of the Freemasonic tribalism when it comes to obtaining and maintaining power. It's all very Jewish. When we have revelations about the Ordo Templi Orientis being allegedly involved in child sodomy and the ritualistic murder, or when we hear about the Pizzagate investigation, which revealed the true extent to which the political and ritualing elite are involved in human trafficking and black magic, it should be of no surprise to us that all of these people are associated with the demonic ancient practice of the Jews and other Moloch-worshipping pagans of ancient times. As I said earlier, I'll repeat myself once again. The Bible states that there is nothing new under the sun. One key element that was left untouched in the Pizzagate investigation by researchers was the role of Jewish influence, not only in these Masonic lodges, but the entire intelligence apparatus and blackmail operations in full effect via the Mossad in Israel. If you consider the extent to which the Five Eyes intelligence network is involved with massive cover-ups and the occult, and it shouldn't be hard to believe that they would not only run cover for these pedophile blood-drinking and adrenochrome-addicted celebrities and powerful elites, but their actual complicitness in the very same crimes. Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, both of which were a part of the pedophile network of human trafficking and blackmailing, were connected to Mossad, who is famous for their efforts in compromising people into complicity with the Jewish agenda. One good thing that came out of the Pizzagate investigation was the knowledge that satanic rituals are being practiced in a widespread manner, not only by Masonic elites, but by celebrities, politicians, and other cultural influences also. It suffices to say that the abominations of ancient times, which seem to mostly be done in secret today, are more widespread than we even thought. Consider how they rub it in our faces with celebrities like Lil Nas X, Lady Gaga, and Jay-Z, all of which are known members of the Ordo Templi Orientis. In 1989, during a segment of the popular Oprah Winfrey program, a young Jewish woman, going by the pseudonym Rachel, testified that her family engaged in generations of ritualistic murder and cannibalism. During the show, Rachel said the following.
You come from generations of ritualistic abuse?
Yes, my family has an extensive family tree, and they keep track of who's been involved and who hasn't been involved. And it's gone back to, like, 1700.
And so you were...
Right, I was born into a family that believes in this.
During the program, Oprah asked, quote, "This is the first time I've heard of Jewish people sacrificing babies. But anyway, so you witnessed the sacrifice?" To which Rachel responded, "Right. When I was young, I was forced to participate in that, in which I had to sacrifice an infant," unquote. Rachel also emphasized that it was not just her family that engaged in this demonic act, but many Jewish families across the country. As you can imagine, the Jews immediately took offense to the broadcast and demanded that it was terminated. Oprah, her producer, and their lawyers went into talks with the ADL of B'nai B'rith to try to come to an arrangement. Oprah issued a public apology shortly after. Speaking on behalf of the groups, Barry Morrison, the Midwest Regional Director of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, said, quote, "We were satisfied that Oprah and her staff did not intend to offend anyone and that Oprah was genuinely sorry for any offense or misunderstanding," unquote. The ADL of B'nai B'rith and other Jewish influencers stepped forward and tried to discredit Rachel by calling her mentally handicapped. They also suggested that Oprah was promoting anti-Semitism. However, a year later, in 1990, Rachel once again stood forward and admitted everything she was saying in the past as truth, and that it really was happening, as noted in the March issue, 1990, of Cult Watch Response. In her interview, Rachel testified that she was a survivor of a multi-generational family who practiced human sacrifice and cannibalism. Aside from the physical aspects of ritual murder, where blood is being drank, there also seems to be a highly spiritual aspect behind it as well. Quite often in history, we see innocent people being slayed in order to appease some false god which requires it. Purim comes to mind. When we look into the reality of the war on terrorism and the oppression of the Palestinians at the hands of the Zionist occupying force of Israel, a Rothschild Jewish state, there is a constant brutal display of human sacrifice, and perhaps it's only loosely associated with the traditional idea of ritual murder as we know it. But if you were to count all of the civilian casualties in Palestine, Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, Lebanon, Egypt, Yemen, and other places of the Middle East, we end up with a figure of several million people. The Zionist think tank organizations, situated all over the world, are very quick to justify these killings in the name of their Jewish homeland and their claim to nativity over the land of occupied Palestine. The emblem of their flag is what the Bible calls the star of their god Rimfan, which of course is associated with Babylon, occultism, and Moloch. Many Jews will try to claim that this is actually the Star of David, but a reading of the Torah will show you that that phrase, the Star of David, never mentioned once. Every single year, Palestinian children are reportedly missing, usually after being taken into custody by the IDF. Many of these kids are taken into prison and never seen again. The United Nations has documented at least 78 of these missing children in their records since Israel's occupation in 1948. However, these are just the Palestinian children that are known to have gone missing. Nobody knows the actual number. Many journalists have made some connections to an illegal organ harvesting trade of which Jews have been at the forefront for almost 100 years. During the war on Syria, it was reported in the mainstream media that piles of bodies dumped in various locations where bodily organs had been stripped and removed of their carcasses. In a lot of these cases, the blood of these victims were also missing. According to the Director General of the Syria Coroner's Office, Hussein Nafal, it was disclosed that the bodily organs of thousands of Syrian civilians have been sold in the international black markets over the past 6 years. He claims the following in a televised interview, quote, "We have accurate information that over 25,000 surgical operations have been conducted in the refugee camps of neighboring countries and in the terrorist-controlled areas in Syria since 2011, to take out the body organs of 15,000 Syrians and sell them in the international black markets." Unquote. According to Iranian journalists who did a story on these findings, quote, "The Syrian Democratic Forces are cooperating with Israeli physicians in setting up hospitals for body organ trade in East Syria. The SDF has engaged in body organ trade by either abducting children or by taking out the organs of the slain militants who had been forced into the ranks of the terrorist group." Unquote. This war on terror is perhaps the biggest bloodshed we have seen on human life since World War II. All of which is done so for the political expediency of the Jewish state of Israel, who justify these killings through their proclamation of being God's chosen people. The truest extent to which these satanic and criminal acts are carried out is not properly known. We may never know how bad things truly are, but it's my hopes that this documentary has been sufficient in giving you at least an introduction into Jewish ritual murder and the Jewish cover-up that's been involved, especially the Anti-Defamation League, whom, from its very inception, was covering up the murder and rape of an innocent little girl for the political expediency of the Jews. If you like this video, be sure to give it a thumbs up and leave me some feedback in the comments section below. If you would like to see my citations, check out the description for links. If you want to support my work, consider doing so on Patreon or PayPal. If you'd like to join my Telegram community, that link can be found also below. And on that note, folks, God bless. Thanks for watching.